Welcome to the Black Girl Flow podcast, a space dedicated to creating conversation that pushes us to be in alignment and at peace with ourselves and the world around us. We are about cultivating joy, growth, and success in our life, love, and identity. So join us as we find our flow. We are your hosts, Liv and Lex, two 20-something-year-old Black girls working every day to be in flow, and we want you along this journey with us.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Black Girl Flow podcast. We are entering the holiday season, and I just feel merrier than ever. I'm not even sure if I've used that word correctly, merrier. Lexi, is that the way that I use that word, merrier?
Yes. Yes, you feel nothing but joyous holiday spirit.
Exactly. And I'm usually not one to set up my Christmas tree like at the start of November, but lately the holiday propaganda has been getting to me. And I've been thinking like, all right, mom, when are we going to go to Home Depot and get a tree? Because she actually threw out our like old, like, each year traditional fake tree. And so now, I guess because she felt like we're all grown up, maybe.
Now y'all got to get a fresh fern, bruh.
Exactly. Do you usually use fresh ferns for your Christmas trees?
No, because my family goes on a holiday trip. We used to, when I was really little, get a fresh tree. So I remember sometimes like going and like picking out a Christmas tree. But they like wouldn't stay alive when we would leave. So, and my parents now have this like really high ceiling. So my mom went for the big old bad boy. So we got a fake one.
Look, man, I just think for me and my family, we've reached the age, or my parents feel like we've reached the age where we're kind of over the holiday spirit and all of the like fun traditional holiday things. And I personally want to know if there are any other people out there whose parents also feel the same way, or like, what does the holiday spirit, like having the holiday spirit, look like for anyone else's family? Because when I tell you, y'all, my mom is like, okay, we don't really need to do all of that stuff. Y'all are older. Like, what do you, I mean, we've always been kind of the family that's like, what do you want, instead of even guessing? Like, so that already takes the Christmas fun out of everything.
Not even. I feel like that's very practical. My family is also that way of like, send mom what you want before December 1st. Otherwise, exactly. you're not getting it, which I think is very practical. Granted, I come from a really big family. So it also is just like, my mom is not going to guess what four children and her husband want, right. And vice versa. But it's interesting because like, yeah, I wonder if there are other people. I just don't know how you can get into the Halloween spirit and not the holiday spirit. So I'm gonna let that one be, because I'll just hold all of the excitement for you. I like wish I could have a Christmas tree at my house, but I'm literally not gonna be home for like 2 weeks straight. So it's just not even practical.
I know. And in your pulse check, Lexi has some pretty big news to share, y'all. This is, oh my God. All right. I want to just like tell them, but because I'm so excited, but you have to tell them.
I have to tell them after 3 long, excruciating months. I think it was almost even 3+ months. Folks, I am a proud homeowner. It is official. I have keys in hand. It's mine.
It's a surreal feeling. I can only imagine, like, you have crossed a different country of adulthood. Like, I'm telling some like random, I don't know,
abyss.
I don't know how to explain myself, but like, that's so exciting. And like, it is. I'm just so proud.
Yeah. And I will have my goal of having Thanksgiving dinner at my new home with my parents, which I think is like, I'm just very happy because it's like, there's just so many blessings already around the place. Like, I feel like all the people that blessed me in the process, then my parents are coming in, that feels like really christening the place. And I'm just so excited for this new journey. It is wild. And folks, There are so many. Buying the house is only the first step. Let me tell you that. I've been bamboozled. There are so many decisions that come after this. But it's all really fun and exciting things. So I'm learning to just like lean into that process as much as I can and not let it be stressful. But thank you. Thank you to everybody who's been patiently waiting.
You know, I feel like that was one of the house buying process for you was just one of those things where you're like, I'm going to stay low. I'm going to just stay underground until it's official. And now we can finally share with you all that she is a true adult and killing it. I feel like for me, for my pulse check, life is good. The only thing that I could complain about is daylight savings time, because that right there gets me every single year. I don't understand why. I honestly, if I were the ruler of the world when daylight savings time comes around, because honestly, like, time is a social construct, right? If it's getting darker earlier, that means that we're all collectively going to have to wake up earlier. So instead of like us gaining an hour, no, we're going to wake up 3 hours earlier so we can have a regular day and it can get dark at 8 p.m.
Brett, if I think about daylight savings too hard, it hurts my head. Like, I'm just going to say that. Time zones, daylight savings, where the sun is, how this impacts me blows my mind, but it's very real. And I'll say this and this only, because I also have not been doing well since daylight savings. I've been doing partially well, just like not in the afternoons well.
Right.
But somebody, one of my friends was saying that one of their work colleagues was like, oh yeah, a week before I was, my daughter would eat lunch 10 minutes earlier and go to bed like a little bit earlier each time so that she wouldn't be thrown off her schedule. And the conclusion me and my friend came up with was, why the heck don't we do this for ourselves?
I know.
It's like we forget to adjust ourselves to the schedule. And so we're doing it with little kids. But it's like, I was like, dang, I wish somebody would told me to eat lunch 10 minutes earlier each day, because I was about to get like all types of discombobulated. So now I have mental notes for sure, but it's been a rough one.
For me, it's a psychology switch, because I have to have like a notification in my phone, a reminder to let me know around 8 o'clock that the sun would usually be setting around this time and to not freak out. So just like psychological, like switch, like we're in a different matrix right now, but just know that this is normal and we're going to get back to normal soon. That's the only way that I can cope through it. But we asked some of y'all on our Instagram what it is that y'all do to cope through daylight savings. And I saw some people say that they take supplements. Are you a big supplement girl?
Oh, I can totally endorse that. I don't have my own regimen, but I've heard lots of phenomenal stories about it.
Yeah. So I guess that's our advice from y'all, the advice that y'all gave to us that we're giving back to y'all. And then there was another thing I think someone might've pointed out, to just like keeping track of your thoughts and journaling and all of that good stuff. So
I don't know if I want to keep track of my thoughts during this time. I just, again, it doesn't make sense to me. So we're waking up, fall back, spring forward. Yeah. So it's like, I just don't get how that results in it was dark at like 8 and now it's dark at 5. Like that, some bad math don't add up. But either way, we are where we are, and Q season for hibernation, it definitely is upon us.
I know. We just wanted to let y'all know that y'all are not alone and we are also struggling. So that wraps up our pulse check.
And I think this is a perfect segue to our episode, Liv, because we were talking a little bit about the holiday spirit and what that means for family traditions, which I think are really important. But I think for a lot of us, you know, the holidays spark a lot of concerns and stress as well. One of those stresses being finances. And this is always an interesting topic between the two of us. So I think we're going to jump right into our episode to get in to talk about the complexities of this.
I know. I'm excited because we have two very different approaches to keeping up with our finances. So
it's shocker.
I know.
All right, so we're gonna dive right in.
All right, Liv. We need to talk about something. You are a big advocate for Black luxury. And unapologetically so. And I am a big proponent of financial freedom. I feel like these things might be the same conversation, but I think we need to unpack them a little bit more so that our listeners are very clear on what we're talking about. Because the holidays are coming. The pockets already looking a little
slim.
Oh, oh, is it slim? And I feel like we need to talk about it because there's so much to this conversation about wealth and luxury and financial freedom. And we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but I think it needs more time. So I want to hear what you really mean when you say Black luxury.
I mean, there, for starters, has been this movement to showcase Black women in multiple facets. And one that has really taken to my attention has been this Black Girl Luxury movement on TikTok, where you see so many Black women getting into tech. You see their beautiful high-rise apartments. You see a day in their life. And it kind of reminds us that, okay, we don't have to struggle. We are able to live our wildest dreams. There's not a limit on anything. But I think what people are seeing is this very materialistic way of living that showcases luxury in the way that showcases how much you have. So it's like having the nicest designer bags, being able to take fancy trips, buying nice clothes, eating out all the time. And is that truly sustainable? Potentially, we could say, for the rich. But the messaging sometimes comes across in a way that could have detrimental effects to the way that women perceive their own lifestyle. Because let's be honest, most of us aren't living in this luxurious way. And
yeah,
it could be argued that are you actually able to live in this way if you are also trying to be generationally wealthy? I think you have to really get to a certain point where it's like, okay, I can still live luxurious because I'm living below my means because I just make so much. But the reality of the situation is a lot of people aren't living that way. And there was a hot second when I was seeing that trend boom on TikTok and over the internet where I was like, oh my gosh, this is where I want to aim to. But when I actually reflected on it, I was like, okay, what does that mean for me? What do I feel like this represents? Right? Because, you know, I'm from Atlanta. So
I know. Remind the listeners.
BBLs are everywhere. Long Brazilian long hair. I can't even name the inches. I've had locks for too long. But there's this lifestyle that Black people strive to achieve when you're in Atlanta. And so Black Girl Luxury obviously might mean a little bit different to me than it might mean to you. And you've always been someone that's really great about recognizing that we have to build sustainable systems for ourselves to truly be able to thrive. You know what I mean? And so we obviously had very different views on Black money.
Luxury.
Yes, Black luxury, money, financial freedom. I guess it would help to provide some perspective on my view, because I think I have said this before. My parents didn't really teach me savings. They didn't teach me a lot about seeking financial freedom. I am just now learning a lot of the tools that people are spreading more knowledge, you know, over the internet about how you can build generational wealth, which has honestly become such a buzzword.
Hold on. It's become a buzzword, particularly on Black males' dating profiles.
Yes. I was just about to say that. Like, if I had a dollar for every single time I saw a Black man put, "I'm trying to build generational wealth" on a prompt
answer. It makes me think, like, did Charlemagne the God say this? Like, who are the trendy?
Who was responsible, right? Like, who was responsible for giving us this word that, like, people say so cavalierly but don't really understand?
Yeah,
oftentimes the depth, the work, of the consistency of.
And don't get me wrong, I actually think this is a sidebar, so, like, cue little
putting a pin in it. Yeah,
put cue the peanut gallery music. But I think actually such an attractive trait for a man is, like, financial literacy and financial goals. Like, my thing is, I'm like, I really like, and I think some girls will probably counter what I'm about to say, but it's like, I really don't care what's in your bank account. Actually, let me say this. I was actually talking to my boyfriend about this, and I was like, I really don't care what's in somebody's bank account. It's your financial mindset, because people can get caught in bad financial situations. I don't think anybody's free of that risk. You know what I mean? Like, granted, like, the wealthiest of the wealthy, sure. But I'm saying, like, I don't think anybody's foolproof against, like, just a crappy financial situation. But it's about having the financial mindset of, like, I'm going to make the wisest decisions. I have that kind of risk analysis. Like, I want to move in this type of way. Because it's like, you're not always dealt a hand that you, like, is prosperous. Right,
of course.
But it's about having that mindset. And I'm like, this is not the 4X mindset. This is not the quick money mindset. This is not a scammer mindset. I'm talking about, like, long-term strategic planning. I think that is the most attractive thing, but it doesn't always mean that just because your bank account's packed, you are making financially wise decisions. And we were, like, talking about the difference between that, because I was like, it's not to me about what's in your bank account. It's about, like, are you making wise decisions for what is in your bank account? I don't really care what that is, but that's a hot take sidebar. You can add your 2 cents to it, but I think there's a difference.
Olivia's like, I need that thing to be fat.
No, it's not even about, I think for a lot of Black women, we talk a lot about the struggle of, and, like, this Ooh. Idea of when you're dating a man and he's like, well, you know, I'm ambitious. Like, you know, I'm trying to make things move, and I'm trying to do all this stuff. I think I just want to be with someone that reflects where I'm currently at, you know what I mean? And have that expectation, because I can't get into another relationship and be like, okay, well, I expect you to have 100K in your savings if that's not how I'm moving. Like, so what, I can just live off of you? Like, that's not how it works for me. But I definitely would love to have someone. I think I need someone where I'm at right now that is able to discern
radio looking for a man.
Sure. Yes. If anyone, I wish you could add, like, soft jazz to be in the background of this. But yeah, it's like, I think the way that I operate, you kind of want someone that balances you out, right? So I need someone that's going to be a little bit more discerning on what is an emergency and what is an impulse. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion on it. Do I care what's in a man's bank account? Long story short is yes, I do. I do, because I'm not about to be in a struggle of situation.
I'm not trying to sideline our conversation, because we are going to get to the Black luxury and financial freedom. But at what point do you ask about what's in somebody's bank account? Because I feel like that is also a touchy subject for a lot of people. Of, like, are you even entitled to that information if you're, like, early on in the talking phase?
Absolutely not. I'm sorry. She said, I'm not.
She said, read the room, Lexi. Read the room.
I wouldn't. I think that transparency is great, right? Like,
you tell somebody how much you got in student loans.
I'm not to that point where I'm trying to build a life with someone yet, but if you are in that space where you're like, I'm trying to find my husband, yeah, I think that's probably important to put that out on the table, like what debt you're coming with, just like how they did in Love is Blind, where she had to tell that man, I maxed on my credit cards. Yeah. Like, and I,
he
and
sold his house for her.
Yeah, exactly.
Because an apartment.
Because that allows someone to create expectations. And, you know, I'm someone that's always been, I'm so intentional about, what are we doing this? Like, when I'm in a talking stage, like, I need to let the other person know what I'm about. So if you're 22 years old and you're like, okay, well, I'm ready for two babies and I'm ready to move in with someone and I'm ready to marry them, then yeah, you should be telling people what's going on. Exactly. But like, okay, that's not something that's obligated.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
You're pretty secretive.
Excuse me. She pointed her finger at me, y'all. Go ahead, what were you gonna say?
You're not as forthcoming with how much you make and like how much it is that, like, what background that you've come from. So I feel like, at what point would you share some information like that? Because you're also older than me. I'm a spring chicken compared to.
Okay, now. Apples and oranges. I feel like if somebody asks me, then I'm like, one, it takes so much guts to ask, and I'm gonna ask the question right back. That's like, if somebody asks, like, oh, I feel like most people can deduce my family background. Like, you know,
I can't even. I'm not even. Yes, but continue.
So I feel like if somebody genuinely asked me, like, hey, do you like have any outstanding debts or like all of these things, like I wouldn't have a hard time expressing that. I do think that my mom has been very intentional about not like saying that, like, hey, especially as being like a financially independent woman, be mindful who you are sharing the details of your financial experience, because somebody could see that as something like they could ride your coattails for. And I'm not the person that, like, I don't like to live in fear in my life, and I want to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I am conscious of, like, if anything, I feel like that's probably more intimidating. But I think what people forget is that, like, when you start pooling money together, like, you have a lot to work with. So it's like, it's not really just about like what I can do or like what I'm doing for myself. I really start to think about it of like, oh, when we start pulling our resources, like, what could we do together? And I feel like that always gets me really excited about stuff. But
it's crazy. And I know that we've had this conversation plenty of times about when you get married, are you putting your spouse's
the hottest of takes.
Right. And like, I'm very back and forth on that. I mean, initially my first thought was, why would I need to have a joint bank account with my spouse? But Lexi kind of provided a different perspective of, we are a union when we are married, and that's how you just have to operate, right? So yeah, that means change in lifestyle.
Granted though, I feel like I very much, and again, my boyfriend pointed this out, like, I'm very much like in the guides of transparency. Like, I'm also in the same, I am the same, you're correct, of like, I strongly believe that like your bank account should become one, like, really, even in the eyes of the government, like, that debt becomes your debt. Like, so why would you not put your finances together? And I get that, again, we talk so much about like your past relationships informing your present relationships and like all those things, but it's like your financial practices of what you got exposed to and like how your parents managed the finances, how you saw that modeled for you, that also impacts how you shape relationships too. So like, I get people come with baggage and like want their financial freedom and stuff, but I'm very much like, we're both going in full transparency. You're dealing with these 3 bills. I'm dealing with these 4 bills. Like, we know what's going in and out, and anything over a certain price tag, like, we're talking about together. But granted, yeah, I'm just not in that situation right now. Which seems like a lot, because it's like, oh my gosh, could you imagine like literally knowing? I it's just like so much.
But yeah, bringing it back to Black girl luxury, I think you're right, because it's like, it's a mindset shift.
Yeah,
when you get to a certain age, when you graduate college, and you're like, okay, I have to manage my life, and the way that you manage it determines how you will be able to live, the places that you will be able to go to, what you will be able to buy. And right now you've lived your life, I would say, pretty much like below your means. And now that's been able to afford you a house because you created that goal for yourself. And you're like, I'm going to save. You really don't travel like that. Like, you don't eat out as much as I do. You don't binge spend as much as I do. And that's how you know, regardless of our backgrounds, you have to be disciplined
for sure
with it, right? And for so sure. I remember we recently posted a TikTok where I showed Lexi being like, quote unquote, like the mom, like paying for some of my meals. Cause I don't know, she's just, if she's extra hospitable or she just, I don't know.
I am, I love language.
She's probably like, you need a little bit of coin. She, you need a little bit of extra coin, baby. No. Sending me back to Atlanta.
I think of it as like, I'm taking care of you and because you're gonna take care of me one day. You know what I mean?
Like a mom, right? So anyways, everyone was commenting under the TikTok, like, she has to teach us how to live, like, financially free, something along those lines that
yeah.
obviously they saw something in you. So why don't you break down
what that looks like for me?
Yeah, and what inspires you to live that way? Is it kind of like the Black man's, I'm trying to be generationally wealthy and like you can see in the future and you're like, I'm trying to create this space, because I think it's a future oriented mindset.
For sure. I think it's such a like both and of it all. And I'm, you know, we've had multiple conversations very openly about both of our financial situations. And I think I asked you, I was like, I could tell you basically where almost every single one of my dollars has gone.
Oh yeah.
Like every month pretty intently. And so I don't think I can to the T that I did maybe like a year ago now, because it's like now I have such like a little bit more of a cushion. Like I know generally what my monthly expenses look like. I would honestly say that before I get into like more in depth, what I would say about like strategies for financial freedom, and by no means am I like a financial consultant or have that background. I think this is just kind of lessons learned from my parents kind of passed down to me about money management and stuff like that. But I have to admit that like I definitely approach my finances, sometimes I have to check myself because it's from a scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. Like granted, I work for a nonprofit. Like I don't make bands. I do consulting work on the side, and I have, you know, various other like projects that I feel like, you know, alternate streams of income and things that I'm working on. And I feel really, I believe wholeheartedly in the diversifying your portfolio. I told people that I used to take that approach to my dating life. I take that to my financial life. Like I think
right.
like it gives you the most options. So I think that really has alleviated, but I think we've talked multiple times. I'm really bad at splurging for myself. Like my mother calls me stingy with my money. Like, I think that's I think that has a negative connotation, but like, I have a hard time spending like a couple hundred dollars, like on myself for something I want. Like I can name two things that I've been thinking about buying for myself for probably the past 6 months. I very easily could afford them. But it's like, I just walk myself through kind of the concept of just like, is this needed? Is this necessary? And like, what joy would this bring to my life in the moment? Yeah. And if it's one of those things, and my mom was a big proponent of this, she's like, if you keep thinking about it, then just go ahead and get it for yourself and move other things around. Like, you know, again, it's not the scarcity mindset. It's that like, then maybe I don't need to go to Whole Foods to get the $5 hummus. You know what I mean? Like maybe I could just get the $2 hummus from Trader Joe's. Like you can move things around and you can make conscious decisions. I think that's where it gets really overwhelming for folks, is because it's like so many decisions being made of like, you know, if you really wanted to buckle down and save and make a big investment, yeah. whether that's in a business, whether that's in yourself, whether that's a trip or whatever, then like maybe look at your apartment complex or like look at where you're living. Like, do you need to be living in the most lavish one? But also cost benefit analysis, is that going to bring you joy? I think so much of what me and you talk about is of like, at what cost? Like
right.
do the impulse buy, do the thing, but like be okay with the consequences of that. Because it would be foolish to say that like you're not a future set mind, you're not a future oriented person. Like you think about your financial wellness in the next couple of years, and you're right, you're around so many older people that like it's hard not to compare yourself, but you're just younger than we are. Like I didn't have my crap together either, fresh out of college like that. Like,
yeah.
So
I mean, I definitely think that there for one, to your point of having that scarcity mindset, I find that people that are like good with saving have that mindset. I wonder if it's like a chemical imbalance in your brain. But when it comes to even living this luxurious lifestyle, right? Like for some people, I do believe, hey, that brings you joy. But if you're not evaluating the other spaces, the other dimensions of wellness that we talk about, so like ignoring your spiritual wellness, mm-hmm. ignoring your physical wellness, like all of these other spaces, is this really what like we want to put our energy towards, mm-hmm. showcasing who has the most luxurious lifestyle? Because it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. And it also, to live this elite, like luxury lifestyle, sometimes I think we don't consider the people that have to, that are impacted by that lifestyle, right?
For sure.
So it's like, if you've ever worked in the customer service industry, you know that you have to create a certain ambiance to reflect, you know, the prices, the clientele. And so the poor people that are in these service roles, you know, are primarily impacted by our need to feel luxurious. Elite. Right. But I also don't think it's fair to be like, oh my gosh, a nap, taking a 30-minute nap for yourself is luxury if you can find the time out of your day, you know, like diminishing, because like luxury, when we think of luxury, we think of material things. And I think that it's great to showcase Black women. Please don't get me wrong. Like I was a fan. I don't even want to say was, but like I loved observing Black women in these spaces, because you know, we don't get it. But even like I'm saying, in Atlanta, where there's a certain level of beauty, that like there's a certain standard of beauty, there's a certain standard of like what it means to be rich, that means that a lot of people are faking their lifestyles in order to meet these standards. And what, as Black people, as you know, some like the ethnic group with some of the most debt in America, the most incarcerations due to these systemic barriers, as we know, but like what would it look like if we actually did come together and started learning more financial literacy?
I think that, to your point, is like really powerful. We've had a conversation about a tweet, or it was like something on social media that was like the difference between wealth and income, and how Black people seem to be, you know, you take like the top 10% of Twitter, Black Twitter, and say,
right,
like, but then we call it the cultural fat or whatever, that's that we feel like is struggling with that. And I know there was one social media influencer, I'm pretty sure it was for Harriet, and she was saying, she's like, I'm one like bad medical diagnosis from being poor, like that could ravage me. And I think that too, so much of what I understand is privilege, especially from like what we typically associate with like white privilege, or I think any type of privilege is associated with like the wealth and status. But honestly, in my mind, I think it's the safety net, because I told you, it's like, just because you have money doesn't mean that you are like adverse to risk. Like doesn't mean that you could ever not be taken out of those financial circumstances.
Absolutely.
In my mind, the wealth that you built, like that's the safety net of like, if shit hit the fan, I have this to pull from. I have this other income. I have this savings. I have this 401k. Like, and don't get me wrong, I don't understand it all either. Like it's confusing. It's a lot. There's too many books on it. People are profiting off of, you know, unrealistic models for this and stuff like that. But I think it's to that point of like, are we just getting bands today, or are we really thinking about, are we zooming out from the big picture and saying like, okay, if there are these systemic barriers to wealth building opportunities, and here's what I'm working with, how do I kind of finesse between? Because I do think it takes a level of finesse to kind of do both. And I think it's in doses. Like, I don't think it's take all of your savings and put it in a 401k. Like, I don't think it's put it in the index 500 and invest it. Like, I don't think it's
do put it all into Bitcoin or put it all into real estate. Like, I don't think it's that. I think it starts in slow incremental decisions. And I feel like this is a motto and a philosophy that we've adapted in a lot of areas of our life. It's like, it's in the tiny things, you know right. what I mean? It's like taking advantage of your employer matching program if they have one, you know what I mean? Like getting started with that 401k and that retirement, like even if you never touch it. And then it's like, And then it's thinking like, oh, if I were to buy a house, what would it look like? Not right. saying I'm going to, but just saying like, hey, because I've had friends who are saying like, oh yeah, I thought I wanted to buy a house and I looked more into it. And I actually saw that my money renting. Would have a higher return. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I'm not going to be here for the long term. Like I actually realized renting was fine and that money would be better spent in the stock market. Right. So it's like, you just got to be curious. It's not about doing it all at the same time. And I think that's where we get it. But the wealth versus income thing, I think, is really big.
What did your process of buying a house kind of like mean for you in establishing what we're calling like wealth? Because it's like, that is a big money making move.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I learned in the house process. So I think in a weird way, and this happens to me often, was like, I'll just speak kind of things out. And I was like, I want to own a house before I'm 25, like not knowing what that entails. And then I ended up kind of setting a financial goal of like saving basically half of my earned income in my first year out of college. And that really got me excited about the idea of, I was like, oh wow. Like I'm reading all these articles of people who, you know, below the age of 30 don't have X amount in their savings account. And I'm looking at mine being like, dang, like, I think I could do something with this. Let me be curious. And I think the biggest thing with buying a house for me was my 5 year, I knew I wasn't leaving the area. So I knew that like, I was committed to that. The second thing to the wealth building opportunity piece of it is seeing that, and this is interesting because to the scarcity mindset and the aversion to risk that I think most Black people have in relationship to money, I was big on like, I don't want debt. So it's like, that was like a clean say. I'm like, I'm not doing that debt thing. So buying a house feels like the ultimate debt because it's right. like you're signing a 30-year mortgage with someone who's non-committal. Like this is an issue. But I stopped seeing the house as debt and I started seeing the house as collateral. So it's like when you start to see the house as collateral, this is now something that I can leverage to get access to more money
right.
to make other types of investments later on in life. Again, it's a risk because if I went down, they'd come for that.
Of course.
But what it does do, and that's why I was like, oh, I remember the day that clicked for me where I was like, oh my gosh, if you're strategic, you buy a house in a good market that over time in the 5 years that I keep it, it doubles in value or it just goes up a little bit. You're going to cash out on that investment or you're going to leverage that value to make another investment.
Absolutely.
And then look at that. That's BOGO, baby. Like right. you buy one, you get another. Like that to me was the like, people move different because they're leveraging the assets that they have as collateral, which gives them more access to wealth.
Absolutely.
And that's where you're making money moves because you realize it's not that people actually have billions sitting in their bank account, or maybe some people do. They're not sitting with like hundreds of thousands of dollars in their bank account. It's that they're leveraging the current assets that they have as collateral to have access. And that's not foolproof, but I'm saying like that right. to me was a big shift in my head and seeing the value in owning a home.
I know, because it's kind of like one of those things that you think about when you're younger and you're like, okay, maybe at some point this is going to happen for me and I will settle down and it'll be great. But then when you get to that age, you realize, okay, not a lot of my peers are moving this way. I'm going to have to really make a decision that feels like a long-term. I mean, it is a long-term decision and shit just feels so temporary these days. I'm not even joking, y'all.
That's real. That's real.
It feels like, okay, it's time for me to maximize my time on this earth and live the way that I want to live without.
But you talk about that all the time to that point of like, it's about experiences.
It's about experiences. Exactly.
I see this as an experience. Like I've told
it's people, one of yeah the most liberating experiences that requires, that's like level 8 of life.
But that's where I think that's where it's like there's such a likeness to what we're saying,
right? Because
that's where I think the Black luxury and the financial freedom conversation merge together, where it's like we're talking about the same thing of like living life full of experiences. It's really just asking ourselves at what cost. And absolutely. I think sometimes what we're seeing on social media is the very instantaneous result of things.
Absolutely.
And what I'm talking about is like that journey to financial freedom. I don't think I'm going to cross the threshold of being like, I've made it there. You know what I mean? Because I feel like it's so much of your mindset of how you're approaching your relationship to money. And I feel like there's still so much more for me to learn in regards to that as I accrue this level of responsibility.
No, I absolutely love that. And also just bringing it back to the community piece, because we always love to bring it back to the community piece, where I feel like financial freedom and Black girl luxury, like what I feel like they're both missing from the conversation, I know that we've talked to you about this, is the aspect of giving back, right? I think you could argue when we're talking about financial freedom and we're talking about generational wealth, a lot of people are like, okay, it's generational wealth. I'm giving back to my generations, but your generations aren't here right now, right? Like you haven't had kids, your kids haven't had kids. How are you impacting the people that are around you right now? Yeah. Black girl luxury, right? I want us to be luxurious. I want us to have the finest things. I want us to be able to showcase that and be happy and to take self-care breaks. But how are we impacting the communities that we are adjacent to? Mm-hmm. And how are we going to bring them along the journey with us?
Yeah.
Because none of it matters, honestly. I mean, like,
no, for real,
we're on
for
a floating real. Rock. None of it matters. It, of course, determines the experience, the quality of life that you want to experience while you're here. But you can't take that money with you when you go.
Yeah, for sure.
And relationships are forever. Like you leave people, you impact people. And that's, I think, what we're truly here. Not to get all spiritual on y'all, no, but I think that's what we're here to do, right?
Yeah. No, I think you're completely right. And I'm actually really glad you brought this in, because I think sometimes, again, money makes it feel like scarcity. Like I'm getting mine. I'm in my bag. You can do whatever you want, but I'm doing this.
Right. I'm just trying to see more commas in my bank account.
Exactly. But I think to your point of like, actually when we all get to share in that and we're bringing along more people in that journey with us, again, with healthy boundaries of that course, getting, you know, it actually benefits more people in that process. And, you know, that's something that me and you have talked a lot about, of like, how do we actually integrate in our financial freedom journey this really key part of generosity and giving back, not in a pity way. And I think, you know, I've even shared some concerns of just like the institutional way of giving. I'm like, I don't want it to just be a tax write off. Like I want to invest in my people. Like if you got projects, you got dreams, like I want to be tied to those things that like, you know, you can left off. Right now I can only afford your dinner, but
right. Exactly. But it just like being financially free is a mindset. Having your community in mind is a mindset. So I just think that this whole conversation ties perfectly into the holiday season of giving back to those that need it. And to also like, if you're someone kind of like Lexi, like that could help a girl like me out. And we all got that one friend that just loves to spend a dollar again. It gets, well, what's that phrase that's like, the more money I have in my pocket, I like burn a hole in my pocket or something like that.
Oh, okay.
You know, we all have that friend that like y'all could really help. And obviously I'm gonna have to do the work on my own. I have to experience that mindset shift.
Right.
But the more that our people can like really internalize that this means so much more for us than any ethnic group in America because of the institutional barriers that are in place, And the more that we can have our community in mind during this holiday season, where it's supposed to be a time for us to give back and to not necessarily be focused on, okay, now I'm about to treat myself to $1,000 Gucci slides and I'm about to give my brother, like, I don't know, $20 so we can go to the movies. Like, let's actually share the wealth, share the information, because knowledge is wealth. And just be more conscious of the communities that we're impacting through our actions of trying to live a luxurious lifestyle, trying to live a below our means lifestyle, and everything in between.
Yeah, there's literally nothing to add besides just seeing how our financial mindset is a crucial part of us understanding how we show up and be in flow. That we can't talk about love, you know, spirituality, our professional goals, and not talk about this when we're talking about living in harmony with ourselves and each other. So we're perfectly imperfect in it, and we'll keep sharing as we know and as we have hiccups and lessons. And I'm excited to hear from you all about what's been some of the hardest lessons you've learned in regards to your financial wealth. Or tell us about the Black luxury. Let us live in the luxury lift with through you.
Absolutely. Because like, that's what we're all here for, to share this common experience while we are here on this earth. But thank you all so much for joining us on yet another BGF episode. Y'all already know what the deal is. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It would mean a lot to us, so we can help find more people to join the community, and follow us on Instagram and TikTok, because that's where the conversation continues. But that is all that we have for today, folks. We will catch you next time. And like always, peace, love, blessings.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys.
All right, that wraps up our episode this week. Don't forget to go check out Black Girl Flow Podcast on social media, and even check out our new YouTube channel to continue the conversation there. We really appreciate if y'all could rate and subscribe our channel. And with that said, see you all next time. Rest well, folks.